Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a Friday morning. Thanks for joining us at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. We appreciate all you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. I want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse here in Starkville or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. Be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in Derricotte.
That would be a little weird.
Yeah. Wherever you are in our...
Derabrew?
I don't know.
Just doesn't work.
Yeah, let's stick with Brupolo.
I think it's way better in Brupolo and, I mean, Tupelo and Starkville and Tuscaloosa as well. I think we're good.
I don't know if they go Bruskaloosa or Tuscabruce.
Bruskaloosa?
Yeah,
I don't Bruskaloosa.
Know. Bruskaloosa would
I
work.
Like that.
Tuscabruce what works too. Not as good?
Bruskaloosa.
Bruskaloosa, I think it's better.
Yep.
Or do you go Tusca? No, Tuscabruce, yeah.
I think Bruskaloosa is
the one. I think that's the better one. I agree with you. Wherever you are in our great state, if you want to enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning, it's just a click away at strangebrewcoffeehouse.com. All you got to do is go to the website, click on whatever it is you want to buy, and boom, coffee will be at your house very, very soon. And don't forget, every purchase supports the Bulldog Initiative, just like you do when you support our friends over at Pip Printing and Signs. Reliable service for every business needs. What that means is simple. Whatever it's going to take to get customers in the front door at your business, Pip Printing and Signs has a solution for it. If you need signage to attract your customers, if you need to brighten up the look of your business with some new signage, they can do that. If they want you looking for mailers, flyers, coupon packages, they can do that for you as well. 30 years being in business here in Mississippi, MSU owned and operated, and every sale they make, if you tell them you heard about them on Thunder and Lightning, they will take care of you and get a 10% of your sale right back to the Bulldog Initiative in your name. If you're a Mississippi State fan, if you own a business, you cannot pass that up. If you need printing, call Pip today. I didn't give the number, 601-499-5216. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com is the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you are looking for. They're making the change, and you need to make it too. The state script is going to be the new athletic logo, so you need to have that on your shirts this football season. Do not show up at Davis-Wade Stadium. Do not start the new era of Mississippi State football with the old shirts. Get rid of the banner M and get some new shirts, get some new hats, get some new pullovers, get them at College Corner. Two locations in the Jackson area, originally by Fleet Feet or flowed by the Half Shell, or you can shop online at collegecornerstore.com. Restaurant Tyler is Starkville's flagship restaurant. That's the place to grab the best lunch in town, the best dinner in town, the best Sunday brunch in town, all in one spot. Sunday brunch is a Robbie Falk staple. After church on a Sunday, you are likely to find Robbie Falk at Restaurant Tyler.
65% chance.
I think it's higher than that.
Could be.
My sources tell me it's closer to 80% chance.
You have sources on this?
I have sources, my
okay.
friend. So, you know, people like to talk. I like to eat, so that's why I go to Restaurant Tyler. Simple as that. That's actually not a bad slogan. I can maybe go.
Some people like to talk.
I like to eat, so I go to Restaurant Tyler.
There you go.
That's not too terrible. I don't know if I can make it full time, but it's not bad. Priority One Bank, 16 locations throughout Central Mississippi. They are here to serve you. Go to PriorityOneBank.com to find the location nearest you and to learn about all the financial services that Priority One Bank can offer you and your family. You're going to be surprised by that list, I think. I think you're thinking, oh, this is another small town bank. No, it's not that at all. This is a bank that offers everything you can get at the big corporate bank, but they give you that small town feel. They give you that small town service, the service you get from being a neighbor. I like to do business with the people that I know. I like to do business with people in my community. I think you do too. That's why I suggest you give Priority One Bank a look. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. It is Friday. It is baseball. Mississippi State heading down to take on the Florida Gators when we were talking about this season a few weeks ago, and we weren't sure about this Mississippi State team, and we thought they were going to struggle out of the gate. And we thought, okay, you know, if they could just get a couple wins here, you know, they'll probably get swept in one of these series, but if they can just have a couple wins, they'll be good. Now we're at the point where, you know, 4-5 is exactly what you would expect from any team that wasn't ranked in like the top 10. Now, Arkansas, you probably expect them to be, through 9 games, he's like 6-3.
It's pretty much breaking even. I mean, it's not, but I mean, it might
as
well
be.
It's as close as you can get because it's 9 games. But to me, it's kind of like breaking even.
Yeah, and that's kind of where State is. So if they get a win this weekend, and then, you know, you get two of your next 3 series are at home, and then the one that's on the road is at Ole Miss, a place where you haven't lost a series since 2015, you do have a chance to really make a statement about being a postseason team. I think when I look at this team, 5 out-of-conference losses, I think the strength of schedule for the out-of-conference is in the 120s. I can't believe we're about to have this discussion, but the idea of hosting, State would have to really be good in the SEC. They'd have to be like 18-12, I think. I don't know that that could happen.
But it could be. I mean, we saw 2016, that team.
Well, they won the SEC.
Yeah, they won 20 games.
Yeah.
But they would have hosted with 17 wins.
Yeah.
And they did not have a good non-conference slate.
But by that same token, though, the 2014 team had 18 conference wins, but didn't host because they lost, I think, 8 in the non-conference.
And their conference schedule wasn't super strong.
It wasn't good.
State's conference schedule is going to be very similar to that. It's probably better than that 16 schedule, to be honest with you, because that 16 schedule had, in the last 3 weekends, I think it was Auburn who was awful, Bama who was awful, and Missouri who was awful.
Right.
You're only, to me, when I look at the schedule, you're only playing one bad team in SEC play. And then the rest, I mean, Ole Miss, I think they're going to be competitive. I think Alabama's going to be competitive this year. I think Georgia's going to be competitive. Mm-hmm. Those are probably your best bets of teams that you can beat outside of Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, you had 9 straight games against teams that were really bad to rack up some wins there.
Yeah.
Arkansas was the other one. It was Arkansas, Bama.
And Auburn.
And
that was Missouri. You're
Missouri.
Right.
No, but Auburn was in there, too.
It was Missouri, Auburn, Arkansas. State lost
Alabama was in there.
State,
they had
State
12 straight.
Two out of three.
They had 12 straight then.
They had 12 straight and they went 11-1.
I guess that's what it was. I can't remember.
That's what
I can't
it was.
Remember to be.
So
exact.
They would have been.
Was it Missouri? Did they play Missouri?
Yeah. They were 10. Okay. They were, so if they finished 20-10, that means they were 9-9 at the halfway point in the SEC play. And then they started rolling.
Well, you know, they got swept on Super Bowl weekend by
Texas A&M. But they took 2 out of 3 at Florida. They took 2 out of 3 at LSU
Vandy.
That year, and they took 2 out of 3 from Vandy early at home.
Those were huge. And that's kind of what I see early in this schedule, too, is you've got some opportunity here to, if you can keep your head above water, you know, somehow, if you find a way to win this weekend, you've won 2 series against 2 top 10 teams. Now you're really talking. Now you're talking about they can do some really good things this year. So That to me is the biggest thing. Is like you just got to find them any way you can get them from here on out.
Yeah.
Anytime you can get a win is a big one, because you're trying to me count down those wins.
Yeah.
And you know I don't think the team should think that way. Obviously, I mean,
right.
We can talk about things differently, but
you're right. But then you know if you're 4-5 in the Robbie Faulk theory here, you have to be 10-11 the rest of the way.
Yes.
And if that's the case, you are no. I think with 14 wins, you're probably no doubt in. With 15 wins, you are no doubt in. So
this schedule in 16, it was wild how this worked out.
There's no way going into conference play you thought the team was any good.
They had Alabama, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
Auburn, and Arkansas in 4 straight weeks, and they only lost 1 game.
They
won the SEC because of that schedule.
Because the way that schedule was set
way.
Up. Going back, that those at least two
and they beat,
of Arkansas
and they beat LSU.
Missouri didn't make the SEC tournament, I think.
They were so bad.
Yeah.
I remember that Auburn series, State just absolutely clobbered them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you beat LSU mm-hmm. before that. So essentially you won 13 out of 15 games?
Yeah, pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's going to happen this year.
No.
Because I know that there's a trip to Arkansas in the middle towards the end there. But well, and on top of that, comes in here too.
On top of that, I don't think this team is as talented.
Team is as good, yeah. It's not nearly
at all. Like that,
but
team
it's a good
is so
team.
Talented.
It's a good enough team to play postseason baseball. And so, if they can get that going, they will. As we are recording, it's 1:23 on Thursday. They've not announced the rotation. That leads me to believe they're giving Nate Dome as much time as possible to see if he can possibly pitch this weekend.
We need to figure out when they did it last week.
It shouldn't be hard.
Because I want to say that it was, and it was on a Thursday. You remember that series? So I want to say that it was earlier in the week when we found out about Evan Seary.
Yeah, it was on Thursday. It was maybe Wednesday. Up? Are you talking about last week?
Yeah,
it was prior to that. It was like Wednesday. Yeah,
let's see. All this media that they got on here. When they announced it before, oh, there it is. It was at 5:30 on Wednesday.
Yeah. So
if we find out today, it's going to be in the afternoon, I guess.
Yeah.
But if they don't announce it,
well, when did they do
it
the week before is the real question.
Well, I think it's been different. You know, first week they did it like on a Tuesday. They did it early in the week.
I'm talking about the first week of SEC play after Dome.
And that's what I'm saying.
Dome
it's
was
been,
hurt.
It's been. I don't think there's been like a game plan.
Yeah. Bless you.
Excuse me.
Oh, okay. I was like, "What is Excuse going me. On here?" I didn't know what was happening there for a second. So now, now you've got me curious on that. About when was the LSU rotation? When was it released?
Yeah, sometimes we research things while we're going because we're professionals.
That's exactly correct. Here it is. I need a calendar. So you're onto something. It was released on Thursday before the series at 2:30. So
it's okay, so afternoon.
So basically an hour after we get done talking, we're going to find out what this rotation is.
Yeah.
I think it's the same. I think it's Seary, Steven, and Drangelo, but I won't be surprised if Dome pitches out of the bullpen this weekend.
Yeah.
Just to see how he is.
That might be the way to go.
Yeah.
Give him a mid relief or later in the ball game or something.
Yeah.
That might be the way to go instead of just throwing him back in as a starter.
Yeah, I agree.
And then from there, next week you can start him on Friday. I just feel way different about this team, man, than I have the last 2 years. And for good reason. We saw them go to Kentucky last year, and Kentucky was better than they have been, but you got swept in week one. And then the year before that, it was kind of some of the same stuff. You're constantly chasing uphill the last 2 years, and it just doesn't feel that way. It feels like they're in the race. Feels like they're there. And this was, we've been looking at this schedule since the summer, or whenever it was announced, and saying, how is Chris Lamonis going to survive this?
Yeah.
This is the toughest SEC schedule
I've seen.
But I think they're making headway. And I'm very, skeptical on if this team is back or not.
Right.
I don't want to say that yet.
I'm not saying they're back. No.
I just feel like we've seen, even when they haven't played well, and there's going to be some lumps in SEC play. There's going to be some games where you're just like, gosh, what are they doing? But to me, the biggest thing has been the fight that they've had, getting back in ball games, even if it's in a midweek game, even if it's against Memphis, getting down 9-3. They would have got run ruled in that game last year.
Right.
They would have got beaten 12-2 against Samford last year.
Yeah.
2 years ago, they did. They got killed by Samford.
Yeah.
So just seeing this team being able to weather storms throughout games and pitch in tough moments and make good defensive plays, it just doesn't feel like the same team as the last 2 years.
Agreed.
And you and I will gladly talk about the good stuff.
Yeah.
We're not going to be constantly nagging about this team. We'll talk about the good when it's good. We'll talk about the bad when it's bad. And there's been no good the last 2 years. But I think you can look at this team, break it down, and you can find more good than bad. And it's been a long time since we've been able to say that. 3 years to be exact.
I agree 100%. So let's find out some more about this weekend's opponent. Not from you and I, though. We will now welcome to the podcast, for the first time in over a decade, the man, the myth, the legend. Let's bring him in, Kyle Niblett. A long time ago, I had a segment on the B&B show every week for baseball season called Niblet's Tidbits. And the man who ran that segment was this man right here, Kyle Niblet, who, of course, was Mississippi State Sports Desk Information Director for a number of sports, but most importantly for baseball when they were really at their peak under John Cohen. And he is now down working at the University of Florida, which is his alma mater. And I decided I need to know more about this Florida baseball team. I'm not going to waste my time with some beat writer or some fan site guy. I'm going straight to the source. Welcome, Kyle Niblet, back to the podcast. What's going on, man?
Not much, brother. It's such a pleasure to be here, man. Such a pleasure to be here. I miss you guys. Uh-huh. Been keeping up with Mississippi State. Saw they made the basketball tournament. That was pretty cool, man. Chris Jan's got it going on. And now it seems like Mississippi State baseball, after a couple of years, they're back, man. And Florida fans are kind of nervous about this weekend because of it.
Really? So just quick, I'm looking behind you. A lot of, I see your degree. I see some memorabilia. Is the picture there?
The picture is actually on the right side, okay. But this camera's mounted. So
okay.
Forever.
Yes. Yeah.
Forever.
Very good. So for those of you who don't know, me, Logan Lowry, Joel Coleman, Robbie Falk, we chipped in. And I mean, when we say chipped in, it was like $10 a piece, but whatever. But but we got Kyle a photograph of us, but we were photoshopped as the Four Horsemen with Kyle as J.J. Dillon, as the ringleader of the group, which he was.
He's got more hair than I do. So.
He did. Back then, maybe. Not now. So good times. All right, I got a question to start us off. Why is Florida the worst midweek team in the SEC?
You know, that's a loaded question. We haven't won a midweek game since February 28th against Bethune-Cookman College.
Oof.
Right? So yeah. We've lost four straight. And a lot of people down here are like, but the national championship team in 2017, they only went 8-5 in the midweeks. Listen, this is not a national championship caliber team we have in Gainesville this year. The reason, to answer your question, is solely when he evaluates his pitching staff and things like that, he brought in this many transfers on the mound, and he brought in about 9 or 10 true freshmen. So this entire year, we've just been throwing freshman after freshman after freshman in the midweek, give or take a couple of our quality bullpen arms. But it's just been it's been growing pains, quite frankly. You have an ERA that's worst in the country. We're 155th, I think, nationally in walks per 9 innings. When you look at our walks and hits allowed per inning, we're behind teams like Jackson State and Abilene Christian. Ooh. But, you know, they had the stuff. The freshmen had the stuff. We're 11th nationally in strikeouts per 9 innings. But it's really about control and executing the pitch. Like against Florida State on Tuesday, Sully called for 2 fastballs in the outside corner. We left him in. Next thing you know, we're giving up 14 runs to FSU, which quite frankly just makes me gag. But it's been a rough start with the pitching staff. You know, our starters, I can get into that if you want me to, but the bullpen is definitely a weakness with the exception of our closer, Brandon Neely. Brandon Neely is one of the best closers in America, quite frankly. He has the mentality that a Jonathan Holder might have. You know, he's gone 8 consecutive innings without giving up a run. He's got 13 strikeouts and 2 walks over that, and hitters are only hitting, I think, .080 off of him. So if we can get to the closer, that's great. But the problem is between our starter and our closer, we don't have that bridge. We don't have that bridge.
It's interesting you refer to him as one of the best closers in the SEC. We just got the email from the SEC for this weekend's rotations. He's your Friday night starter, is Brandon Neely.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's fabulous. I wish I could go back and hit you with all the different notes, but I think one of the reasons for that is you look at our starters, and you know we've played. You know, we're over halfway through the season, about halfway through the season, and you know we lost on Tuesday to Florida State, and Sully said we're going to change things up. And one of the things that I've been personally pitching for in my group of friends that talk about Gator baseball religiously is putting Neely in that Friday night spot. You look at our quality starts, and we've only had 3 quality starts all season, and they're from our Sunday guy. What team in America, their best pitcher throws on Sunday? It has to be only Florida. So I really like the idea of putting Neely as the Friday night starter, and hopefully, you know, he can extend. He was a starter a couple years ago when he was a freshman, and so he can go 4 or 5 innings, and then you can kind of have a Fisher Jameson or a Ryan Slater come on. And then we have this freshman that kind of grew up against Texas A&M when he was forced to come in and get the save because Neely's bicep was kind of hurt. His name's Luke McNeely. So I would expect him now. He's number nine. He's a true freshman. He's a right-hander, throws up to 95, 96. A lot of arm side run. I would expect him to come in and be the closer with Neely moving to a Friday night role. Now, do you still have Liam Peterson as the Saturday starter? I haven't seen
Liam Peterson as the Saturday, and then, of course, Jack Caglione on Sunday.
Okay.
You should put your SID hat back on for a second.
Yeah, of course.
What would you be doing with a both-handed pitcher?
Both-handed pitcher?
Yeah, with Gerangelo Sinjay, a guy who throws with both hands.
Create a bobblehead doll, but instead of the head bobbling, it would be both arms bobbling. And then I would mail that out to anybody that votes for said awards. But man, yeah, you know what? I've heard about this kid. I've watched him pitch.
Yeah.
The fact that he can pump, 94, 95, I think, from both sides. Like, I'm so excited. And
it's like he's 96, 97 now from the right. Wow. And then the left is a little lower. He's like usually 91, 92, but he's still able to spin it there.
And he's still going on Sunday? Is he scheduled for Sunday?
No, State moved up. So State's throwing Steven on – I know, right? State's throwing Steven on Friday, Gerangelo on Saturday, and then TBA. Our old friend, TBA.
Oh, TBA. I used to take the old Monday Night Raw smoke and mirrors TBA thing and put him in the graphics for Mississippi State as a nod to my wrestling fandom.
Yes.
But I was really hoping to get Gerangelo versus Caglione on Sunday, but it looks like we're getting Peterson Gerangelo on Saturday.
Yeah, so and we'll see who State pulls out on Sunday, if Nate Dome can come back for that, or if they're going to go bullpen. I don't know what they're going to do there. Maybe it may end up just being Sierra the way it's been the past few Fridays, so we'll see. Caglione, is that the best player in college baseball?
I don't know if I would say he's the best player. Mm-hmm. I would say he's the most valuable to a single team. If he did not exist, we don't win at LSU, we don't take the series against Texas A&M, we don't take the series against Miami, and all of a sudden, combine that with our midweek schedule and we're not in the top 25, we're not in the discussion to host. So he's the most valuable player, certainly, when you think about what he brings. Like, he's the only guy on our team that has a quality start. He has three of them this year. He's 3-0 with a 1.65 ERA. Opponents are hitting 110 off of him. He's got three quality starts. And then, oh, by the way, he has 12 home runs. I don't know if he's the best player, but he's the most valuable. And I would definitely say, without a shadow of a doubt, he's the best two-way player. And I think he's better than the McKay kid from Louisville that the Rays drafted a few years ago. I had Brad Wilkerson over my shoulder, who was the best two-way player in Florida history. And he's better than that. So, but yeah, absolutely.
What about, as far as two-way players go, Brent Rooker, who threw, I believe, one inning?
Oh, Brent Rooker, man, you want to talk about two-way players. How about Logan Cook, who threw a fastball one time and then punts for the Jaguars?
There you go. Mangum could count, too. He pitched a couple of games.
It's so awesome to see the success of those 2016 guys. I think there's four guys on opening day rosters. There's five guys nipping at the buds to be on those opening day rosters.
This is Mangum's year.
Mangum gets called up to Tampa, I'm going down.
So you're a Rays guy. Yeah, I just thought about that. Yeah. So that's
cool. I was pretty excited that he got traded to
Tampa. When he does that, you and Bob need to go and just make it like the old times. Just get some, you need to get press passes to be. Mangum will make it happen for you.
The mayor can make anything happen.
It's true. When you look at the SEC for baseball this season, I feel like Florida, they're not the best team. Arkansas is the best team. And I don't know.
Their pitching staff's ridiculous.
I don't know that they're the second or third best team, but they're dangerous every week. Is that a way to describe this Florida team? They are capable of beating everybody in the conference.
Absolutely. I would say they're capable of beating anyone in the conference. And with the exception of Missouri, I think they're capable of losing a series to anybody in the conference. You look at their last 16 series, they've only dropped two of them. They're 14-2 in their last 16 SEC series. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons why that is we live by the long ball. We're sixth in the country in home runs per game. You look at, our 1 through 6 in the order, they all have an OPS over 855. There's four guys with an OPS over 1,000. To me, it's one of the best 1 through 6 in America. And then you get down to our 7, 8, 9. They're hitting about 200 around the Mendoza line, and they're automatic outs pretty much. So if Mississippi State can get into a tight game and get into the ninth inning with 7, 8, 9 coming up, they should like their chances. But the daunting fact is trying to get through that 1 through 6. But again, none of our starting pitchers, with the exception of Caglione, seems to be able to go past three or four innings. So Neely has his work cut out for him this Friday night. But you're right, the talent level is there, and these freshman arms, you know, Sully knows what he's doing from a pitching perspective. He's shown that. He arrived in 2008. He has the best winning percentage in conference games since that span, I think 618, 61.8%. He knows what he's doing on the mound. And those freshman arms are only going to evolve and mature and get better as we grow into April, as we get into May, as we go to Hoover, as we host regionals, hopefully. But right now, it's kind of a toss-up. It's like a box of chocolates. You don't know what you're going to get with this team except on Sunday.
When you look back at that 2016 team, Kyle, and they were kind of similar in some ways. I don't think that team – that team was a lot more talented top to bottom than this current Mississippi State team. But they got off to a really slow start non-conference. They lost some games they probably shouldn't have lost. Mm-hmm. But then they started out conference play, same thing. They were playing the number two team in the nation in Vanderbilt. State played the number two team this year in LSU. That game was
– Brown versus Beatty.
Yeah, that game was in Nashville. Those games were in Nashville.
Oh, yeah, that was the year after, my bad.
Yeah, you're thinking of 14, I think. They get two out of three from them. They can take two out of three from Georgia. They took two out of three from Ole Miss. And even then, because the way they had played in the non-conference, there was like, well, they're good, but they're not great. Then they went down to Florida and got two out of three from the number one team in the nation at that time. And that was when the season kind of took off. Now, as we were just talking about on the podcast, they ended up getting swept by A&M, but they finished the year, I think, 13-2. In the last five series, which is just an incredible feat. For you with this Mississippi State team, from what you've seen, and from this Florida team, if State wins this series this weekend, how much should Mississippi State fans take away from that? Should they be at that point fully bought into this baseball team being, I haven't used this word, but being back?
I hate the term being back. But you know, if Mississippi State was able to come down here, it's certainly not the Florida juggernaut that was here last year. You know, we replaced our entire left side of the infield. Wyatt Langford, who's on the opening day roster, was playing for us 249 days ago in the College World Series. He's not in left field for us, but it certainly is an accomplishment. I mean, you look at Florida's resume on the weekends, you know, win at Miami, win at LSU, home against Texas A&M, who I think is one of the top 10 teams in the country. If Mississippi State comes in here and takes two or three or sweeps, that's an accomplishment. I mean, you can't take that away from anybody, especially that'll give them series wins against LSU and Florida, and, you know, Florida on the road. And, you know, it's not duty noble. It's not, you know, the box or anything, but just going to Florida, you know, that's an 8-hour bus ride. That's a 5-hour flight. That's not easy. You know, the fans aren't going to be on you like they would in the SEC West baseball stadium, but it's not easy. So I think it would be definitely an accomplishment. I think it would be looked more favorably in May when seeding time comes, because the Florida you're getting now is going to be a completely different Florida come mid-May, like when we're playing our last weekend against Kentucky or we're heading to Hoover. I think if you can get that series win now, it's going to mean a lot to the committee and the selection committee come the end of May.
All right, last question. I'm going to put a two-minute timer, because I know if I didn't, we would be here the rest of the day. And we're a week early on this. Does Cody finish the story this weekend?
Well, listen, man.
Or next week. You know,
I've been talking to people from Singapore to Baltimore, Sudan to Japan, and let me tell you something, my man. I texted this to you last year.
Yeah.
Last year, WrestleMania ended.
Yeah.
And Brian Haydad said, what's going to happen? And I said, they're going one-on-one next year. And you can get your book out. You can flip to the end, because my man Cody is going to finish the story. And boy, let me tell you can put all the blood on the Mama Rhodes belt. You can smack your hands like this. You can acknowledge whoever you want. But come Sunday, April 7th, the story is being finished. And the American nightmare and the home of freedom, Philadelphia, is going to turn into an American dream, baby.
Yes. Well, you're way under on that one. We got time for a run-in at that point. We had time. So watch out. Kyle, I cannot stress how good it is to see you. Enjoy baseball this week, and hopefully not enjoying it too much now that you're a Florida guy, but good to see you, buddy. And WrestleMania, we will definitely be texting back and forth again. I miss the parties. I miss the watch party at the house, man. It's just every year now. It's like, where are we meeting? It's always a different place. And it used to just be, we're going to Kyle's.
Yeah,
so it's just easy. So,
well, for the sake of both of us, let's just hope that Morris Hodge and Jeff Head aren't umpiring this weekend.
Let's hope for that. Kyle Niblett, everybody, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Take care. God bless.
All right, thanks to Kyle. Appreciate his time. Good to talk to the man.
You know, we coined way back in the day, 12 years ago now. It's hard to believe. Kyle was, I guess you gave him an introduction, but Kyle was the SID for various sports during his time.
Yeah.
He started off, I think, in softball or was doing like softball.
Yeah.
And he recruited me because he was kind of like my mentor whenever I was in media relations. He helped me a lot. He actually made me a better writer.
Yeah.
And he recruited me to be the PA guy for softball when Van Studenman had pretty much just gotten here.
Yeah.
And so, like, we had fun up there, man. That little bitty press box, the old press box they had up there. We made it fun. We were cracking jokes. I was giving people nicknames on the PA. He was jumping on with Anthony Craven for SEC Network Plus or whatever they were doing at that time. And we coined the term Nibbler Domus because he would say on the broadcast, like, so-and-so's about to get a big double right here, and they would hit it. Or you know, somebody's about to hit a home run. And so he became Nibbler Domus, and he became like a character, man. Like, he was a guy.
Big time.
I still remember the day he texted us and said, please turn on Monday Night Raw. And they were in Memphis. And
he was there.
Daniel Bryan was in the middle of his Yes movement that he was doing. And so they pulled everybody on the front row into the ring. And Nibbler was standing there in the front of the ring and was getting yelled at by Triple H. Triple H was like, look at that fat guy down there.
He had heat.
And I remember I talked to Chuck Dunlap about this the other day, and Chuck Dunlap tweeted at the time, did not expect to get a text about one of my SIDs being out there on the mat.
Monday Night Raw, yeah.
Yeah, so Nibbler's character. And if you watch wrestling to this day,
you'll see
there's a very good chance you're going to see him in the crowd.
You see a guy in an Everton jersey, it's him.
And the wrestling community hates him.
No, they hate. Sorry, talking about
the fans.
Yeah, the people inside the business love him.
They
because
do
because he's a good fan. But
I love him. Just, I miss him.
I miss him too. Good to talk to him. All right, let's move into the rest of the show. That's brought to you by our friends over at the Mississippi Beef Council, who want to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. If you're cooking out this weekend, nothing beats the sizzle of beef on the grill. So fire it up. Put some steaks out there. Everybody's a winner with that. Or, you know, if you want to cheat, I won't say anything. If you don't, just go hit up your favorite steakhouse here in the state of Mississippi. We have so many great local steakhouses. We got some that are super fancy, and we got some that are down home, but they all cook a great steak. So check it out. Beef, it's what's for dinner, thanks to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District is the place to find the smoked Southern soul food that you are looking for. I had a change of plans, but I will be at Two Brothers Good Friday, but I'll make it work. I'll make it work. Don't worry about me. And you know what? If push comes to shove, I'll just go to confession. It's no big deal.
Yeah, why not?
Just be like, I ate meat. Can I get a couple Hail Marys and we're out of here?
Yeah, we're good. Just get some fish,
huh? They do have some seafood options there.
Might as well.
And that's a good thing. They have fish tacos. They have shrimp tacos. If you don't want to eat meat, they got you taken care of there. But it doesn't matter what you want to eat. It's going to be good, and it's going to be a great time every time at Two Brothers Smoked Meats. Great products, great service. That's what every business likes to promise you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems. They've been doing it for 49 years. So, if you are looking for new, just about anything for your business, any kind of technology, a copier, a printer, new computers, new laptops, give them a call. And then if you need service, Advantage Business Systems is right there. No problems, no questions asked, service after the sale. That's how they've built their business, and that's how they've been staying open for 49 years. 601-362-9192, or visit them online, absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. Sorry, I misread something on Twitter, and I was just like, that cannot be right. But then I realized I misread it. So
you've done that a couple times already today.
Yeah, I had the Josh Hubbard thing, and Then this one, it said, happy birthday to Kelly LeBrock, born on this day in 1960. And I read it as 50. I was like, there's no way she's 74. It's not. She's 64. No. Like, I can live with that. Okay.
Just catching up with my parents.
Yeah, yeah. And what's funny is earlier today, I listened to the Hard to Kill rewatchables, which she's in, obviously. And so I was like, what are the odds that Kelly LeBrock would be trending? It's her birthday. I had no idea. So happy birthday, Kelly LeBrock. If you're listening, I don't know if she is or not. I doubt it.
Probably not.
Probably not. If you're headed to Starkville this weekend, make sure you've got a trip to Maroon & Co. planned out. You need to check out their incredible selection of Mississippi State polos, T-shirts, hats, pullovers, whatever it is you're looking for. Maroon and white with the new logos that you want to see. They've got them at Maroon & Co. They are the exclusive provider for the Bulldog Initiative. So if you want to wear those hoodies and polos that you're seeing the coaches wear, you can only get them at Maroon & Co. When you are going to Dooney Noble, to Davis Way, to the Hump, make sure before you do that, you head to Maroon & Co. One more spring preview for this week. So next week, if I'm doing the math right here, so what the next week would bring us?
Mm-hmm.
We should be LSU, Ole Miss, and then, I take it back. Ole Miss would be the third. In the middle of that would be Oklahoma. So that'll be our first one. I don't know any Oklahoma Riders. I need to find one.
Eli Letterman is technically, I know that
but he's not a current rider with anybody. I mean, I'm sure he could do it, but I'm going to get somebody that's currently with the media.
I think if I know somebody that Oklahoma.
Is there an Oklahoma on three? There's got to be.
Yeah.
Right?
They got a site.
We'll figure it out. But it's cool that next week is Oklahoma.
That's crazy. That'll
be our first time ever to talk
we
gotta
about it. We got to start, like, just thinking about the fact that they're in this
league. And, of course, with Texas, same place that. Texas, so.
Did you see the Boomer Sooner Schooner
yeah, whatever made a trip came here through? While I was gone, yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
That is cool.
They're in College Station yesterday.
Yeah. Have they been to Oxford?
I don't know.
Because I want somebody to say something.
I've only seen a few.
Well, I saw them at Texas A&M as well.
They were just
there. And then I saw them somewhere else. Arkansas, okay, maybe somewhere else. It may have been Auburn, too. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get the interview in. This we're talking about Kentucky today, which, of course, for years has been Mississippi State's East opponent, no longer. And so we'll add John Hale to the list of guys we probably aren't going to talk to again this season. But just in case, you know, we do, we always have his number. So John Hale, the Lexington Herald leader, talking about the Kentucky Wildcats in this edition of our spring previews. This is another one of those interviews of a guy I would probably talk to three times this year, but this will be the only time because Mississippi State and Kentucky no longer on the schedule. But John Hale joins us. He's been on us with us many, many times from the Lexington Herald leader. And John, Mark Stoops, 10 wins three seasons ago, follows it up with back-to-back 7-6 seasons, disappointing seasons, I would guess. I don't think that he's on the hot seat by any stretch of the imagination because of what he's done with that program, but what's the temperature in the room on Mark Stoops going into this season?
I think it's a huge offseason. I think it's arguably the most important offseason he's had at Kentucky since those early years when he was trying to build this thing from the basement of the SEC. It's going to tell us a lot the way the next 6 months, 12 months play out, what Kentucky's realistic ceiling is in the new look SEC with Texas and Oklahoma and no divisions, because like you mentioned, it felt like they had reached this new high and then taken two steps back the last 2 years. I mean, he got the latest contract extension he got was in the middle of that 2022 season. And literally the next day after they signed that contract, they went out and lost to Vanderbilt, snapping Vanderbilt's really long SEC losing streak. And they're a game over 500 since he signed that contract extension. It's just not what the standard he had set or what fans have come to expect have been. And so now the question is, can you rebuild? Can you use the transfer portal? Can you take advantage of these new roster building mechanisms in college football to get Kentucky to a spot where you can contend for an expanded playoff? That should be the standard now. They were right on the verge of that in 2018 and 2021. Now, can they do that again? And if not, if they're still hovering around this 7-5 kind of regular season record, we know the schedule is going to get harder because, like you mentioned, that Mississippi State game that Kentucky has won at home the last decade is not on the schedule. There are going to be years where you're not going to get to play Vanderbilt on every year if they're not one of your permanent opponents, whatever the schedule goes to. So Kentucky cannot rely on that weaker SEC East schedule to help them pad wins like they have at times over the last 7 or 8 years. This is a huge offseason for Mark Stoops, and I feel like the fan base definitely has kind of upped the pressure on that too.
Last year in the portal, Kentucky's kind of went with production over potential with Devin Leary. And excuse me, quite honestly, I thought he was disappointing. I expected him to have a pretty good season. I thought with Liam Cohen coming back that offense would hum a little bit, and it just didn't at times. It's the opposite this year with Brock Vandegrift. No, huge potential, but we haven't seen any production out of him. What are your early thoughts on him and how he's going to fit into this Kentucky offense?
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there. I mean, at one point last summer, I was writing a story where I was polling SEC beat writers about whether Devin Leary might be the best quarterback in the league because there was so much turnover.
Yeah.
And clearly, he was in no way, shape, or form, even in that discussion.
I don't feel bad. I did the same for Will Rogers. Don't feel bad.
Yeah, I mean, he might be in a spot where he's not even going to get drafted in April. Yeah. I mean, and so it was definitely disappointing. It was disappointing because there were moments where you saw that potential where he'd make two or three highlight reel throws a game, and then two plays later, he would overthrow a wide open receiver by 10 yards. It just never worked out. It felt like he was a bad fit for the pro style offense they were running in terms of just going from a spread at NC State to figuring out the terminology and the play calling and all those things. It just didn't work out. And so what they did this offseason was essentially go back to the Will Levis model. Let's go find a guy we think has NFL talent who hasn't proven it yet on the college level, who's blocked behind, you know, an entrenched starter at his current program, and make the bet that we can develop that. Obviously, when they made that bet, Liam Cohen was still the offensive coordinator, and he had that track record of developing quarterbacks. He has since gone back to the NFL again.
Yeah.
And so the question is whether Bush Hamden, who they hired from Boise State, can be that same developer of quarterbacks. You know, the early returns are positive through 5 spring practices as we talk now, but we're not going to know until we see A, Hamden calling plays in the SEC, and then Vandegrift actually going out there and performing, you know, when the game's on a line, not just a blowout situation.
Liam Cohen just loves moving. He loves packing it up and going to a new town. He never wants to stay anywhere. It's weird. Berrian Brown is one of the best playmakers in college football, an explosive, exciting athlete. But who complements him on this offense for Kentucky this year?
Yeah, that's a big question. I mean, for all of the talk we just had about Devin Leary disappointing last year, in fairness to him, part of that was because those sophomore receivers did not make the jump from year one to year two that, you know, fans, coaches themselves hoped for. There were a bunch of drop passes. I don't think that they had learned the finer arts of playing receiver in terms of route running and, you know, beating man coverage, those kind of things yet. And so Berrian, when you get the ball in his hands in open space, can obviously make plays with anybody, especially as a kick returner. He can do things that just most people can't do. The question is, can he become a better receiver? I think, you know, or they also fired their wide receivers coach, brought in Dakiel Shorts from Houston, who is a longtime Dana Holgorsen assistant, played at West Virginia. It feels like that relationship is going better for him with those young receivers right now. He's younger. He played the position. He appears to be able to relate to them a little more. Maybe that's the key to making them take the step, but they need Brown to be that guy. They need Dane Key, the other receiver who's opposite him, same class, going to be a junior this year. They need him to take a step forward. He was probably their best option last year. And then they went out and added Jamori Macklin, the cousin of Jeremy Macklin, who started his career at Missouri and then ended up going to North Texas, where he was, I think, one of 24 receivers in the country who had 1,000 yards last year. He's going to come in and be their slot receiver. So those three guys are big. And then early indications are Bush Hamden really wants to take advantage of that tight end spot, who they have 3 or 4 options coming back as realistic pass catchers there. Ray Davis was a huge part of the passing game as a receiver last year. We don't know if they're, you know, whoever the next running back ends up being is going to be that same kind of weapon. And if not, those other positions really need to step up.
One thing I do like about this team is the offensive line. I mean, we talk about experience. There's well over 100 combined starts between those 5 guys. Would you say that's the strength of this Kentucky team?
You know, in some ways, for sure. The experience part of it is a big deal because, you know, they built this rebuild around being physical, around what they, you know, they've hyped as the big blue wall. That's what they call their offensive line. And then 2 years ago, it was one of the worst offensive lines in the country. They made some significant progress through last season, but we're still, you know, had some moments where it was a question mark. It was interesting because they initially signed their offensive line coach, Zach Yenzer, to a one-year extension. His contract was going to expire this summer. They signed him to a one-year extension in December. And then after Nick Saban retired and Eric Wolford, the offensive line coach at Alabama, who was here in 2021, who's a Youngstown guy like Mark Stoops and Vince Mero, when he became available again, they went out and fired Yenzer like 2 months after they had signed him to an extension and brought Wolford back to try and bring some of that physicality. There's definitely options there. They've got two super seniors coming back who came back for the extra year, and Eli Cox and Marcus Cox, the left tackle and the center. That's a great place to start. They got a bunch of guys who have played games at guard, whether they're SEC caliber, I think still up for debate. They went out and added Gerald Mincy and Jalen Farmer from the transfer portal from Tennessee and Florida, respectively. So some other SEC level talent in there. There's some questions, but I do think that the floor is much higher for that group than it has been in 3 or 4 years. Whether the ceiling is as high as it was in 2021 when they had two draft picks on the line, or 2018 when they had an All-American guard and All-SEC left tackle, All-SEC center, I don't know, but it certainly can be a strength if things develop the way they want to over the next few months.
Defensively, I just kind of trust Mark Stoops, right? I feel like they'll put out a good unit, but is there a defensive player on this team that you look at and you say, okay, he's potentially an All-SEC guy, potentially an NFL guy?
Yeah, Deion Walker, the defensive tackle. I mean, he's huge. He's like 6'6", 340 at this point. We just talked to his defensive line coach this morning. They want him to get around to 325. But he's the guy when NFL scouts walk in the building for 2 years now have been waiting for him to be eligible. I mean, there's a scenario where if he puts the work in the weight room and takes that jump now year three in the program this year, where we're talking about him as a first round pick, this time of year from now, getting ready for the draft. That's absolutely on the table. He's got to go in and do that work, but it all starts with him up front. I mean, he's not always going to put the huge stats up there because so much of his job is to take up space and blockers and occupy, but he's also certainly capable of winning those one-on-one battles and making plays in the backfield on his own. So he's the star of this defense. They've got a lot of experience around him. J.J. Weaver, the outside linebacker, who we thought was maybe poised for a breakout finally last year, didn't have the season he wanted, finished strong, and then elected to come back for the extra COVID season. So maybe this is the year he finally puts it together. Maxwell Hairston, the corner, tied for the SEC lead in interceptions last year in his first year as a starter. He can take another step forward. They went out and signed Jamin Dumas Johnson, the transfer from Georgia, who was an All-American on the national championship team 2 years ago at inside linebacker. So there's a lot of options on that defense. They need to have a better season, though. I mean, it was not quite as strong as it had been last season from the 2 or 3 years before that. So there's pressure on that group, too. But there's lots of experience and lots of talent on that side.
Whenever we've talked in the past, I've always said that the Mississippi State-Kentucky game is a swing game for both teams. The winner of that game is going to have no problem going to a bowl game. The loser of that game is going to have some issues. Doesn't exist for either team anymore. What is the new swing game in 2024? What is the game that's going to tell you enough about Kentucky's season this upcoming year?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like that South Carolina game is probably taken over that spot. And in some ways it was in that same conversation even when Mississippi State was on the schedule in terms of their East standing. But now I think that's a game. If the schedule's difficult, I mean, they have to play at Texas. They obviously still have Georgia and Tennessee and Florida and all of those traditional SEC East powers on the schedule. They've got Auburn and Ole Miss this year now with going away from divisions. They have to take care of business in those games against Vanderbilt, against South Carolina. They've won three in a row against Florida. You need to keep that streak alive if you want to have a chance to be in that 12-team playoff conversation, certainly. But even if you just want to make sure you're going to a bowl game, those are games that you lose those two games and suddenly you're worried about not getting to six wins. And so that South Carolina game, it feels like, is the one now. And it seems they're probably going to be Kentucky's permanent opponent, whether it's a 8-game schedule in the future or go to 9-game. They're going to stay on it for Kentucky. So that one is shaping up, certainly, as the one that's going to tell us a lot about Kentucky's seasons, I think, this year and many years in the future.
Well, John, I guess I'll see you at Media Days, but it's going to be weird not talking to you this fall. Have a great year, man, and enjoy yourself, and I'll talk to you again very soon. Have a good one, man.
You too. I'm sure I'll be back in Starkville eventually.
Yeah, and when you come, please don't mention Chelsea. I would appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll try our best.
All right. So as I mentioned to John there, Robbie, you know, for years we've always sort of circled that Kentucky game as like that's the swing game. If State wins, they're going to be in a good spot. If they lose, and you don't have that anymore. And I didn't think about it for Kentucky, but this is very true. What John was saying is, you know, they can't rely on the weak East schedule anymore. They don't know that they're going to play Vanderbilt every year. They don't know that they're going to play South Carolina every year. They don't know that. I know Missouri was good last year, but you know, most years that Missouri's in there, that's a game where you feel like Kentucky can win. They can't rely on that anymore.
Yeah.
So what he was saying about this being the biggest offseason of Mark Stoops' career, it's very true. They were 10-3 in 2021, and then they go back-to-back 7-6, 7-6. I don't think he's on a hot seat this year. But another 7-6, they might say, look, we can improve. We can be better. And we might have to make a move here. So Kentucky needs to be an 8-9 win team this year for that not to happen, I guess.
Yeah, they were kind of getting stale with him mm-hmm. last year. They were just okay.
And then he took the A&M job.
Yep.
And then didn't take it.
That's really going to be a problem whenever he loses a couple games.
You're correct.
People are going to start turning on him. And then they had the whole thing with him and John Calipari and about the basketball and football school thing. And it's just there seems to be kind of a wedge there. And I don't think this is going to end well one way or the other with him. And the thing is, they owe him a lot. He's mm-hmm. made them somewhat relevant. I mean, they definitely have a ceiling there with him. He's not competing for SEC championships, especially now. Like, I just don't see them competing at that level.
No, and I don't either.
Their best years are, you know, 9-10 wins.
Yeah.
So they're kind of like
Kentucky be
State
a team that, not every year, but can be a playoff contender once every 3-4 years? Can they jump up to a 9-10 win season?
Yeah, they could. They started to recruit well enough. Like, they can get in that realm. And
yeah.
They play really good defense.
And it depends on the schedule, too.
It also depends on who they have, like, calling their offense. And
well, next year it'll be Liam Cohen again. But he'll be back.
Yeah, he's back for his third trip there whenever he leaves the NFL once again.
Right.
So, I mean, who's there now?
Who is the Kentucky offensive coordinator?
Yes.
You know, it's funny you ask, because we were just talking about him, and obviously I know who it is, that it's Bush Hamdan. What a great name.
Yes.
Bush Hamdan.
Yes. So
that sounds like a WWE jobber circa 1989.
Right.
Like, if I told you that, you know, tonight the Magnificent Morocco was
going to
wrestle.
Like Tiger Ali Singh.
Magnificent Morocco was going to wrestle Bush Hamdan. You'd be like, okay, so he's got a jobber match tonight.
Right. Know? Yeah, I don't know anything about him.
Let's see where he was prior to this. I think he was at Boise.
Another transfer quarterback.
Yeah, he was most recently the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach at Boise, and they do have a transfer quarterback. It's Brock Vandergriff from Georgia. And so it's kind of the opposite of what they did last year. Last year they got Devin Leary, and they got a proven guy they thought could maybe take a step forward. He didn't. This year they've got an unproven guy, but the ceiling appears to be high.
It's a Will Levis situation.
I mean, this is a guy who he got beat out by Carson Beck. There's no shame in that. Carson Beck's the best quarterback in college football.
Yeah, they've done a good job of getting quarterbacks. I mean, Will Levis obviously did some good things for him, and he had not proven anything.
Yeah,
he was the better of the Tommy Stevens type deal, the Penn State backup quarterbacks. He was the better of the two, but. Yeah, I thought Devin Leary kind of underperformed in what was supposed to be a really good offensive year for them. Mm-hmm. I think the big thing for them last year was Chris Rodriguez, mm-hmm. you know, early not playing. Wasn't he playing for them last year?
That was 2 years ago.
Okay, it was 2 years ago.
Ray Davis was a running back last year.
That's right. That was a big detriment to them 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Is not having Chris Rodriguez.
Yeah. He came back in time to kill Mississippi State, though.
Yeah, of course he did. Ray Davis was like setting the world on fire.
Two years ago, Rodriguez's first game was against Ole Miss, and he was rusty. And of course, they had a chance to win the game.
Beat them.
They didn't do it. So,
if the thing about Kentucky now is, it's going to be a lot harder for them to rack up those wins. They get their schedule set up in a way that they play these awful teams early, and they get out to 5-0, 6-1 starts. Mm-hmm. That's going to be more difficult to do now.
You know who their first game is this year?
Who?
You want to guess?
Not really.
Southern Miss.
I don't want to think, oh, they'll kill them.
You know, you say that. The last time Southern Miss went to Lexington, they won.
They did. How long ago was that? That was
18.
It was a while.
17, something like
that. What's their schedule look like in the front end?
The front end's tough. They play Georgia week 3.
Yeah, this is going to be tough for them.
They play USM, then they have South Carolina and Georgia at home.
Okay. Then should beat South Carolina.
Ohio week 4, then they go to Ole Miss. So you're talking they're probably at best 3-2. It depends on that South Carolina game. They play Vanderbilt. They should be able to beat them 4-2. They go to Florida. If that game was in Lexington, I would no doubt pick Kentucky to win.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll say they win. They won three straight.
They've kind of taken over that series.
They get Auburn at home. I mean, honestly, with Peyton Thorne, I think Kentucky can win that game in Kentucky.
Yeah, that's one thing. Like, they play really well at home.
At Tennessee, that's a loss. Murray State's a win. At Texas is a loss. And then they finish with Louisville. I don't know how that game went last year. I think Louisville. Kentucky won. Kentucky won.
Yep.
Because I remember you picked.
I picked Louisville. I should have just stayed with my pick. If I would have stayed with my pick, I would have had a chance.
Yeah, you had a chance. So what do we give them then? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 wins. Maybe 8 if they can beat Louisville. That wouldn't be bad. That'd be a good season for them. So we'll see. All right, like I mentioned, next week, LSU, Oklahoma, and Ole Miss. So a very interesting week on the spring previews. Guys, have a great weekend. Robbie and I will be back with you on Sunday evening to talk some more Mississippi State sports with you. For Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Adad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi.
Time to play the game! It's all about the game and how you play it. All about control and if you can take it. All about your debt and if you can pay it. It's all about pain and who's gonna make it.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.